independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Jeremy left us early, so it's Joe and Joel for the final hour of the show. I took my L earlier, and who said it?
Killer Jays.
Killer Jays.
Jays, trays, and fadeaways.
Can we
Joe.
Talk, since Jeremy's gone?
Yeah.
Can we talk about who said it for a second?
You want to kill him now?
Can we drop it to three?
You always are bitching about the.
No. I actually think it would make it more competitive.
How?
It's hard. It's only three instead of five.
What's your thought process for the
because
reason why?
All right, so you have six, seven hosts to choose from. And we do five who said it, and you guys don't like when I double up. So sure. If we do three, there's only three who said it to choose from and seven, and I'll never double up again.
See, I was going to say, you have to alter the rules in another way for the competition committee to consider.
Yes. No more double ups. Double ups retired.
It's better.
No shenanigans.
You don't scare me. I mean, at this point, I've created a dynasty for myself in terms of the Hall of Fame of who said it, that you don't scare me, but it's under consideration because I think sometimes we have a tendency to overanalyze, and that takes up a lot of time to try and – then we're rushing through a couple of them.
Fair.
So it's under consideration. I think it was a completely boneheaded, stupid move now that it's behind us that you completely eliminated the bench because otherwise you would have been in the driver's
seat. Yeah, I just didn't feel like that was fair.
Because you had multiple guys you could have gone to.
Yeah, but you guys – have you ever met Danny Vera? How many times have you hung out with Josh Beard?
Never, except for when we crossed paths changing when he was filling in for somebody else.
So that's where it's like, I felt like it was unfair. So,
but Branham used to work with him, and so do you. So Branham would know him.
It's true. It was the best show ever on the Highway to Hell, the Bull Rush.
Was that saying something?
Maybe not. Okay. All right, so...
That was a Charlie Palillo, a young Charlie Palillo.
I was his producer for 6 months. I had to learn something.
Yeah.
Well, so before I got fired.
You learned a lot about baseball.
That's true.
In the 50s.
That's true. All right, so... We've been talking a lot about, contract extensions, what it means for this team, where you're at with, Bregman, Altuve in the future. But one of the young guys that we haven't really talked about an early extension for yet is Hunter Brown. And Dana Brown last year, he was part of when he was with the Braves, they signed a bunch of their young guys, and they have their young superstar, Spencer Strider. They signed him to a seven-year, $92 million contract. Mm-hmm. He was 23 years old when he signed it. So right now for Hunter Brown, that buys out, 2 years of free agency if he signed that deal today? Would you sign Hunter Brown to a seven-year, $100 million contract at this moment, or do you want to wait a little bit longer?
I don't think you're in a rush yet. I think I would like to see a full season at least play out so that I know exactly that it's not fool's gold. I mean, obviously, everything leads you to believe it's not. But you want to keep continuing to see his dominance, his progress, his success, to know that he's the kind of guy like a Strider where it makes sense to wrap up. I wouldn't rush it for this year because he just made his big league debut. But I think at the end of the season, if you look back at what he produced and what kind of the back of his baseball card looks like, I think that there's a discussion to be had with the way that Dana Brown kind of uses his thought process in locking guys up. I think it's a discussion for the offseason.
Yeah, I wonder how Jim Crane's going to, what his thoughts are on this. Because, obviously, they signed Bregman, Altuve early. They signed McCullers a little early. So, the Astros themselves have done this in the past, too, with Jeff Luhnow. But these are bigger dollar numbers than what the Astros are throwing around.
Well, and you got Kyle Tucker has to factor in here somehow. Because at some point, you're either going to have to say yay or nay, and either the writing's on the wall that he's going to stay or he's goodbye because he already turned down the Yordan type contract. And I think wisely so because I think that he feels like he's a better, he or his agent or both feel like they're better defenders, they're better everyday players in the outfield from a defensive perspective. And they put a value on that, and rightly so as well. But I think with that, it becomes more challenging to throw bigger dollars at him if you're locking down Hunter Brown and or other guys in the meantime, because the one I was going to throw at you that's up for discussion is Jeremy Peña. Do you feel differently than you did coming off the ALCS and the World Series MVP in terms of there was an uproar early at the start of the season about you got to lock down Peña. You got to do the kind of contracts they did in Seattle and Tampa with their young players, and you got to think about locking him up right now. And I said no then, and I feel maybe stronger now that you don't have to do it right now.
I think the issue with Peña is what is he going to ask for? Because his projection and his numbers are not on par with Juan DeFranco from the Rays.
Or J-Rod.
But, you know, look, he's a World Series and ALCS MVP, a Gold Glove winner his rookie year. Like, he finished, what, top five or top three in Rookie of the Year, whatever it was last year. Like, he's a really good player. But I wonder if he's going to be – would be chasing, like, that $300 million contract that Wander
we
Franco
knew that
got, and that's a different conversation.
Once Machado signed his, we knew that Bregman might be a problem because you think that Bregman's a guy that's kind of – got his eye on that kind of money and hoping that he fits into a deal like that too, which I can't see happening. But I can't see Jeremy Peña being worth that kind of money because, you know what, I keep saying this to Jeremy whenever we talk about free agents, in the fact that you can't pay a guy based on what he did. You have to pay him on what you think he's going to do. And what he's going to do in the future is what I think you're seeing this year. I think you're seeing a guy that's going to be up and down offensively. We've seen his defensive prowess go down. He's not going to win a Gold Glove this year because he's had a lot of errors and he still has range, but I don't think that he's ever going to make you forget about Carlos Correa's defense, but for a year he did. And so I think with those things factoring in as well and other contracts around him, if that's the kind of money he's after, then you got to just let it play out because I don't think that it would be very wise if you're the Astros thinking about locking him up at big money long term right now.
Yeah, I'm good with a little bit more of a wait and see. I think that the Astros need to be pretty aggressive with – I think they should be aggressive with Hunter Brown and Kyle Tucker. And, you know, the thing when you look at Spencer Strider's deal, which is interesting for the comparison, is that the first 3 years of the deal, he doesn't make ever more than $5 million. And then it balloons to like $20, $26 million. And Kyle Tucker, I think for both these guys, like you could do something very similar. Because when you look at the Astros – 2025 is a totally different world than what we live in right now. You know, at that time, Jose Altuve is a free agent. Alex Bregman's a free agent. Abreu's contract has 1 year left in the deal. Montero has 1 year left in the deal. So by 2026, you don't have, at the moment, Abreu, Montero, Bregman, Altuve, any of those guys locked up. Lance McCullers is the next year. So, like, they're going to have money to spend. So, like, they can wait these contracts to where in the early part of them, they pay less money on the back and they pay more. And you know, because of the draft picks they lost, I think that's where, like, you need to be more aggressive with Kyle Tucker versus other guys.
I mean, what's your gut feeling? Because I've already been on record with Jeremy as saying, and I think Jeremy's on the same page as I am, I don't think Kyle Tucker resigns here. I don't think that Jim Crane's going to want to pay the kind of money and the length of the deal that he's going to be after, and it goes completely against what they have said that they won't do in the past. And I think that it's going to be a, hey, thanks for the memories kind of situation, just like we've seen with everybody else.
But see, what's interesting about that is, like, I think the Abreu signing might show that that's not true anymore.
See, because I think the opposite. I was just going to bring that up. When we were talking about Abreu, we were talking about the fact that, thank God we didn't do long-term big money, because the one thing that can blow up the potential for a dynasty continuing is when you have a long-term deal. Now you're putting yourself kind of in Vegas, right? You're gambling. You're rolling the dice, because the more of these long-term big money deals you make, the more risk you run if one or two don't come to fruition and look like the return on the investment is there and you start taking it in the shorts. Now that money is real money, and it's for a real long time.
It is, but I think the difference with Kyle Tucker is that if you made this move this offseason, like Jose Abreu was a good baseball player up until last year, and then at 36, like, it's a nosedive off the cliff. We're, like, begging, like, everyone. Joe Espada just did a media tour, like, talking about why he thinks he's going to turn around. But Abreu signed that contract at 36 years old. If they gave Kyle Tucker a 10-year contract this offseason, he would be 37 when it ended. So because he's younger, like, you're not talking about when Springer was almost 30 when he was going to free agency. Same thing with Carlos Correa. Like, if you pay Tucker now, he's only 26 years old. The majority of the lifetime of that contract, he's still going to be a really good baseball player. And that's where it's like, yeah, the back end, it sucks. But maybe, Joe, there's a way to wait the middle.
But when you look at it in terms of, and maybe it's just me on my eye test, and you know I'm more critical than most. I think it took way too long for him to kind of get good and do what everybody thought he was going to do, and now more power to him. He's been good. But when I look at it as a, and the same thing we did, when you start comparing him to some of the other guys that are going to get locked down and get the big money from an Acuña Jr. or a, you know, the kind of guys, the J-Rods of the world and the other guys, I see those guys being dynamic players for the majority, especially because you're getting them at a younger age.
Yeah, you're at 22.
But I look at Kyle Tucker, his body style, his athleticism, the way he kind of goes about his business as opposed to other guys. I just don't see the same kind of player as the guys that are locking up those long-term big money deals.
No, I definitely get it. I think if you signed him to a 10-year deal in the offseason and he was good until he was age 34, in the last 3 years, he's Jose Abreu, like, I think it's worth it. Because the one thing with the Astros is while, you know, they keep bringing up guys and like there's always more, you have so many guys coming off the books at some point in the next 2-3 years. You're going to have to pay people to rebuild this roster. Like, you're going to have to make an Alex Bregman decision, an Altuve decision. So, like, would you rather in 2 years sign Alex Bregman to another 5-year contract or 6-year contract? Or would you rather give Tucker just 10 now?
But you know what I'm going to say, and it's twofold. One, at what price? To answer your question directly right off the top. And then the other is, if I do sign Kyle Tucker to that deal, does that mean that I'm going to walk away from Bregman and or Altuve and others, where you know that that's going to hit a sensitive spot with a lot of people in this town because they want Jose Altuve to finish his career as an Astro?
I think Altuve will.
But at what price? Again, because
I think he'll take more of a discount.
I think he will too, but I don't think Bregman will.
But yeah, I'm be honest, I'm okay.
And I think that when you look at it, there's going to be people hurt by the fact that we let another one of the key cogs in this run of Astros, golden years of Astros baseball, get away. There's going to be people upset about that. There are going to be people that put a value on it from a more heartfelt perspective than from a return on and a plus-minus perspective. But I think that if you don't sign Kyle Tucker, there's an end and a means to saying, okay, I can still find a way, get Altuve on a discount, Bregman, we can talk, but I still have money that if it's not Kyle Tucker, I could add a couple of pieces to keep this thing going.
For sure. I do think most people would be okay with Bregman walking.
They're getting there. Based on what they're seeing right now.
Like 220.
Right. They're like, getting there.
I think most people would. When 713-780-3776, text line, HRMP listener line. Like, what do you guys think? If you came down to Kyle Tucker and Alex Bregman, and one of them is here through 2030, which one do you choose? We'll talk about it next year on the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
It's Joe George and Joel Blank here with you for the final hour of the Killer Bees today on a Friday. We'll be off on Monday, back on Tuesday. The bench returns on Tuesday.
John Grinaldo will be back.
John Grinaldo.
We had a text message. John Grinaldo in the morning?
What are we doing here?
I'm on vacation.
It's not even close. How do you get Grinaldo?
I don't know. Then you're going to get the classic response. Oh, it was voice texting. Oh, it was, yeah, my bad. I was typing on the fly while I was driving.
All right, so a couple things from the last two segments. So you guys, in the last segment, Jeremy, because of Jose Abreu, he said, who are the most hated Astros players? I don't really have one. Besides Ken Giles.
That's the great answer.
Like, there's no one that's been I've been in Houston now for, 8 years. There's really been, I think, Mike Fiers.
Fiers was
pretty unlikable, honestly.
But he threw a no-hitter.
While he
was an Astro, you didn't hate him.
He just
is public enemy number one with Astros fans once he left.
Yeah, he's a hard one to read because... Look, the Astros before this Brewers series were on before Monday's game. The kid who was pitching for the Brewers was traded to Milwaukee.
Who's the last piece
from the Astros in the Hader
Gomez.
And then for Gomez and for Fiers. The Astros, Chandler Rome tweeted this out, that the Astros in their PR statement, they acknowledged the trade and they didn't reference Mike Fiers, which is awesome.
It is great. I love it. It's like, petty, but it's great.
Yeah, so for me, it's like Ken Giles is really the only one I would say that's been like, a really dislikable player. Like, he punched himself in the face. He obviously got into with AJ. Like,
those were the things that drove me batty.
He's just a loser.
Then when he was just like a extra piece of baggage they carried along the way, he had zero Fs given on his tank top in the champagne celebration in the locker room. It's like, how about zero effort given, Ken? Like,
yeah.
But you know what? When you were saying that, there is a reason to hate Fires at the end, because he kind of did the same thing. After he had the success, then he got pissed at AJ, and then he got ticked off at the way he was being used, and then he was left off the playoff roster, and that started this whole thing that ended up with him being the ultimate rat.
Yeah.
So there is, at the end, a way to put Mike Fires in that conversation.
Definitely. It's, and everyone's going to have like a different perspective. Sometimes it's the way a guy plays. Like, for me, it's just the immaturity. And obviously, like, Roberto Osuna hasn't been mentioned. I'm sure he's at the top of a lot of people's minds.
But he played while he was here.
I know, he did his job. But
he
sucked as a person.
True.
So it's like he almost doesn't count for this, because the off-field stuff outweighs the on-field. Like, this is more like, who did you hate, like, on the field?
Like, see, I for could their see Branham saying
baseball
that
actions.
Because Branham's very staunch on that stuff as it relates to all these guys that we've talked about, even Udoka and John Moran, other guys. But I think, to me, Chris Beard was another one that he was very staunch on. I think that, to me, when I look at this, I say, as an Astro, when he was, that's the way that it was phrased. Osuna, when he was an Astro, did his job. And he was a model citizen. There was no dust-ups. There was no issues. There was no any way, shape, or form with the clubhouse, with the management staff, with the fans, with his family that we heard of. And then we heard that he, you know, was basically exonerated. He didn't get charged with anything in Canada. So I don't know that I would put him to that level of some of the other guys that were mentioned. But I can see where fans just had a bad taste in their mouth with the fact that Luno said they did their due diligence and went and got that guy when you could have, like, just stayed away.
All right, so then at the end of the last segment, we did, if you could sign one guy through at least 2030, would you rather do Bregman or Tucker? And the text response has been pretty 50-50. We got Bregman till I die, Kyle Tucker, it's not even close.
Yeah, I told you, that whole sentimental thing with Bregman's going to be a key.
Like, I get it. I get sentimental, all of it, but
here's the other factor.
When is the need to be sentimental not worked out for the Astros? They let Correa walk, they let Springer walk, the Cole, Verlander, Keuchel, Morton, and, like, it's a lot of guys. And you can say the same thing for Kyle Tucker.
But can I question that? You're right, and I was going to say the same thing. But can I say that the one pushback is you got rid of the analytical mind in the room that was going to be the guy that pushes hard to say, we don't do long-term, we don't do big money, and we don't care about emotions because they're all numbers-driven? Because when Click walked out that door, Dana Brown seems like a guy that's a little bit more sympathetic to what you've done for the organization over the length of your career.
I think he's also just going to be reasonable. He might say, like, we would like to keep you, Alex, but you have to play ball. Like we're not going to go out there and pay you $30 million a year like you're going to make next year and be this 200 hitter. And a lot of it just depends on how he plays. I mean, going into the last year of his contract, if he plays great baseball in a contract year, it might totally change the conversation.
Well, I think it
in a bad way.
In a complete honest moment here, not that I'm not always, but I'll tell you this, in all honesty, if he plays his ass off in the final year of his deal, he's playing himself out of Houston. Because I don't think the Astros are going to be...
That might be best for Houston.
Yeah, though. I don't think the... I think it would actually... You might be right. It might be the deciding factor to where they say, open market, you're going to get way more than we're willing to offer you. We love the fact that you've been an Astro and we'd love to keep you. But at those numbers, we can't, because we have other guys we need to take care of and things we need to do to stay competitive and relevant. And I think that's the way the fans could kind of digest that a little easier.
Okay, we had a text here from 0002. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but the gist of it is that obviously we know Jim Crane has the opportunity right now to purchase AT&T. Mm-hmm. And we also know that, you know, during the pandemic, they bought out Home Plate and all those bars and stuff. Right. They tore it all down, and we're going to get what I've dubbed and others have dubbed as Craneville. He's going to build a bunch of bars, a bunch of restaurants, all in that area. It's going to be all owned and operated by him. So he's going to get all the profits from everyone that drinks and eats before and after games. He might have a TV station that he's going to own like 50% of, most likely with the Rockets. When all that stuff starts to play out, and it's going to kind of coincide with when all these contracts are up, he's going to be making a lot more money. Like, Do you see a path to where he starts just spending money because he's got it more than before? And he's already making a ton now, but once all that stuff's in place, he is going to make a lot more money than he currently is.
I think that here's the misconception, though, that the network's just automatically going to make money. Now, the one thing that I'll say is, because I think that it's in everybody's best interest, and I know enough to know that I think it's on the table that the Astros and the Rockets try and swoop in and buy AT&T Sportsnet. But I think that the reason why AT&T Sportsnet is going under in part is because they had to pay such exorbitant rights fees to both teams that they were already behind the eight ball trying to sell enough sponsorships and commercials and revenue to make up for it. And so they never were able to do anything more than maybe break even. And the other caveat to that is the Rockets have sucked. You know what? And in all their ventures into this cable game, one of the teams has sucked. So you need the Rockets to get back to respectability and more so that both teams have a level of success on the playing field that would translate to more sales.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, Jim Crane is not going to reap the benefit. Now, from the whole Crane world.
Yeah, because like, think about like parking. Like, I mean, like there's a lot of teams. You know, I know this is there's been some lawsuits involved with this with Dan Snyder and the Commanders. But like, he owns all the parking lots around the stadium where the Commanders play. So when you pay $40, $50, that money is going directly into Dan Snyder and the Commanders' pockets and Josh Harris, the new owner. Mm-hmm. Like, Jim Crane can do the same thing. He can buy all the parking lots up, which he probably already owns, what, A, B, C, and D, those lots.
Yeah,
But he's going to buy the rest at some point, I would imagine. And, like, he can just keep making more and more
money.
Think
about it.
He has more motivation to be good now.
It's also not that it's as big a draw or a big enough draw to really factor in, but those parking lots are also used for anything that goes and happens at the soccer field. So they're going to cash in a little extra there.
Yeah.
And if you do what the Patriots and the Packers have done and other teams are doing in terms of building a whole stadium neighborhood environment based on the old school Wrigleyville, but now looking at it from a more modern perspective with hotels and restaurants and bars and retail shops.
I can't wait. It's going to be awesome.
It's going to be a really, really kind of a must-see kind of experience the whole day instead of just going to a game venture. He's going to cash in hand over fist, but how much of that profit is he going to be willing to turn over to kind of have to absorb going over the tax and having to pay extra and extra
to
keep his team competitive? Because I don't think that should change the organizational philosophy as it relates to baseball about no long-term big money deals unless you somehow stumble on J-Rod before he blows up or, you know, a really premier player.
Yeah, it's going to be – I think what's most interesting to me, like the contracts, it's definitely – it's Tucker, it's Hunter Brown. I'm really curious like what Fromber's going to get because like his deal is likely to be more short term. But the Astros like have a lot of big decisions on their hands coming up here in the near future. All right, coming up next here on the Killer Bees, Joe and Joel with you because Jeremy's gone. He left us for the final hour of the show. Something we mentioned earlier with Kelly Eco when he was on with us from The Athletic, that there's all these veterans, Eric Gordon and others, talking about the leadership of James Harden. We're going to talk about if we buy any of what they're trying to sell next year on the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
It's Joe George and Joel Blank for the final hour of the show today here on the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. So earlier, we had Kelly Eco from The Athletic on. You guys can find that on the podcast when we load it after the show. It was a good conversation about the future of James Harden. And one of the things, Joel, that got brought up in the conversation was some recent comments made by Eric Gordon and Bruce Brown. So Eric Gordon said, if you look at a young team that's trying to figure out a way to get back into winning, why wouldn't you have a guy like James Harden on the team? And then Bruce Brown, who was teammates with him in Brooklyn, said when James left, the locker room was kind of quiet. Nobody really did much together. James was a great teammate on and off the court, was definitely one of the best teammates I've ever had. He's just a different breed. And I know, you know, you went right to the joke about, you know, where James has taken these young guys.
Mm-hmm.
But it's almost like, in a way, Russell Westbrook where everyone's like, why do you keep bringing this guy in? He's not good. But then everyone wants him. James wanted him. You know, Paul George wanted him. LeBron wanted him. Like, James Harden kind of seems to have that where, you know, veterans like to play with him and young guys. Like, see, do you buy that at all?
Here's the thing. Russ is across the board, no matter what you see publicly and his interactions with the fans and or what happens with coaches on the bench or whatever, Russ is basically across the board loved by players in locker rooms he's been in because he is the ultimate teammate. The reason why he and James got sideways is because he wanted to hold James accountable. If James was late for a plane or late for practice or was doing his own thing and he was, in his mind, on the same level as James, and yet, you know, no one was fining or going to James saying, you know, these guys' time matters too. You can't be doing this kind of stuff. It rubbed Russ the wrong way. I think that what I saw was the same thing that I'm saying about Russ is not the same thing that I saw from the people that worked with James. The people that worked with James worked with a guy that could be volatile. He could be prickly. He could be a guy that, you know, if you asked him to do something or you mentioned something to him in and around the building, you had no idea which way he could go, but the chances were it was not going to end well for you in terms of how he was going to get emotional. And then that doesn't even get into all the things with all the players, the drawing in the line in the sand during the season and having, are you on Team James or Team Dwight Howard all year and having them go back and forth and somehow still make the Western Conference Finals. And then it translates to what your teammates think when it's supposed to be your team and in the games that matter the most, you set the all-time record in turnovers in a game against the Warriors, or you just don't show up against the Spurs or other teams when you had a chance to take advantage. And it all kind of gets roped into the whole big package of saying, for all the Browns and the Eric Gordons, I can tell you that there's a lot of guys that are like, I'll pass.
Yeah, and those are, you know, Kelly talked about that too, where it was like the, and what you're saying, you know, Chris Paul, Russell Westbrook, seemed like Kevin Durant.
Dwight Howard didn't like him at all.
Yeah, Dwight Howard. And some of those guys, like, Russell Westbrook doesn't fit in anywhere, right? Dwight Howard doesn't fit in anywhere. Chris Paul's the exception. But also James Harden is at the center point for all these veteran, really talented players that these teams get broken up. You know, Brooklyn got broken up. Now Philadelphia is going to get broken up because of him, because he's going to leave. It's just bizarre. Like, I don't really get why. I get why, like, you might like being friends with James. And I think that's where maybe Eric Gordon himself is almost misguided in his belief that...
But Joe, here's the thing.
Where he belongs on a young team.
Let me give you a different scenario, okay? So, say you and I are doing a show here in the future, okay? And as part of it, you know, it takes off, and at the end of the day, I'm getting ready to do something else, and I'm like, Joe's the guy, Joe's just the dude. And you know, you can't turn your back on what we've done as a show. You got to take care of Joe. When I leave, everybody says, dude was a D-bag. Dude was annoying. Dude was, you know, this, that, and the other thing. And no one really liked me. But the thing is, because of our success and what I did on the way out, you got what you wanted. That's what happened to Eric Gordon. Eric Gordon, no matter what happened the rest of the time, or if the Rockets won a championship or not, Eric Gordon was one of the key pieces they couldn't let go unless James wasn't here anymore, and he made a boat ton of money because of it, had some success, won Sixth Man of the Year. What are you going to say the rest of your life? Whether everybody else hates me or not, you're probably going to go to bat for me and not say a bad word because you know what it meant to you career-wise or financially. I think that's why Eric Gordon said what he did.
Yeah, no, it's a huge factor for sure. It's just, I don't know, like, I don't really get what their plan is and what direction they're going and why James Harden still seems to be at the forefront of it, because it just feels backwards.
I think Bruce Brown could say the same thing. Bruce Brown got a great contract. Brooklyn was so strapped with cash, they couldn't afford to pay what Denver did. Denver got one hell of a player, and everybody's saying Brooklyn should have never let him get away. But you know what? In part, the reason why he got the cash and the payday and the years that he got was because he capitalized on Harden and KD. Kyrie was hardly ever there. But those are the guys that kind of paved the way for him to be a valued player to make a ton of money. Yeah. Those are the guys that aren't going to bash
it. So you think that, like, the, you know, we've heard, you know, Jalen Green's response last week when he was doing the podcast, or earlier this week when he was doing the podcast with Paul George. And Paul George was saying, you know, he anointed him the king of Houston. And then, you know, Paul George was saying that, You know, it's kind of weird. Like, you bring in Harden, it might, you know, disrupt your game. And Jalen Green said facts. And then at the back end of it, he kind of, you know, went how there's positives and negatives.
But you know why he backpedaled.
Because he knows that it's going to happen.
Yeah, he knows there's a chance he's going to be playing with him. And the last thing you want is James to walk in the door and the first interaction is, so, you think I'm going to be a problem?
And that's what's weird about it, too, is that, you know, like, there's all these Instagram posts from with, like, some of the young kids walking into the stadium and James Harden's commenting on it. And last year, right after James got traded, you know, James and Jalen Green are in Vegas together and James getting, like, this new, like, pair of shoes and all this stuff's going on. It's like, there's clearly a relationship there. And that's where you just, I think at this point, like, it's almost hope for the best. It's like you hope that what you saw in Philadelphia is what you get here.
You have so much to lose if you say something that starts to burn that bridge before it even gets to being put into place, as opposed to if you play James is my boy, James is my, you know, my meal ticket in a lot of ways to getting my next contract and getting taken care of until I do and all the other things that go with it. But as a Rockets fan, that should be cringeworthy. If you know they've already hung out and they've already like partied, that should scare you to death because I can go to at least five guys that I know off the top of my head whose careers were altered in a negative way by being taken under the wing of James Harden and being taken on flights and taken to cities and taken on party ventures that didn't end well for them because they couldn't compete both like from a liver standpoint alone with James Harden.
Yeah, because it's so funny because like everyone's like, well, James Harden's great at basketball like, and he does all these things when he goes to Vegas. But, like, James is a different animal, man. Like, it is with James Harden, it sounds funny, but like you have to almost respect what he does. The fact that like he can go to Vegas and party and go to the clubs and then show up way out of shape and be as good at basketball as he is. Like, he's probably one of like the only people on the planet
No. I've lived through both of them. Because Charles Barkley's the other one. I've never seen anybody do the things that Charles was able to do Monday through Friday. Burning it at both ends, staying out late, doing the things that he did, and still playing great the next day. And I think that James is out of that mold. But you're right. It's few and far between.
Yeah, it's Chuck, Rodman, Harden. Yeah. I wouldn't even know who else to put on that list. Michael.
The Last Dance was on the other night because the Lakers Nuggets game 5 wasn't.
Did you see what Scottie just said?
No.
Scottie Pippen just said on a podcast that LeBron James is statistically the greatest basketball player of all time. And then he just said flat out, Michael Jordan wasn't a good basketball player.
Oh, my God. Because if you watch it again, there's every reason in the world to think that Scottie was just a dog. Because I've said before, I don't think Scottie ends up top 50 all time without Michael.
Yeah.
But when I look at the way he quit in the Jazz series and the way he quit afterwards when he didn't have the play called for him against the Knicks and all the different ways, like when Batman needed Robin and he wasn't there.
Yeah.
It makes Michael that much greater in my opinion. But it was also the whole bizarre, getting back to the conversation we were having, that Rodman skipped after the playoff game to go do WWE stuff.
Yeah.
And that they let him back, didn't suspend him, and he played a massive role in winning a title. Like, what coach these days would do that?
I'm really curious what they're going to do with the Dennis Rodman movie, because I was really excited about it. But the guy who was going to play Dennis is getting canceled.
He's in a lot of trouble, yeah.
So I don't know if they're going to have to change characters. Because, like, man, that movie was going to be awesome.
Dude, Carmen Electra, straight fire. I mean, no matter what age she is, I mean, whew.
And Junior Bronco's right. The only reason why Scottie's saying that is because
he's pissed at the way the Last Dance portrayed him.
Well, I mean, Michael Jordan's son is dating his ex-wife.
Well, that too.
So, I mean, he's going to be a little more angry. All right, your Houston Astros are back in action tonight against the Oakland A's. We saw a new stadium picture for what's going to look like in Vegas. It's kind of a shocking number of how many people will actually be able to go to games in Vegas. We'll hit on that next. And plus, just what are your expectations for this upcoming series versus the A's? It's the Killer Bees here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about the good people at Apollo Men's Health. I've been telling you about them for quite a while. I was there bright and early this morning. They take care of customers, and they get results on a daily basis. For men and women, it starts with hormone therapy and all the different ways that you can administer it yourself at home or have them administer it for you, including cutting-edge pellet testosterone therapy, where you only have to go in once every 6 months, but you reap the benefits on a daily basis. They also have weight loss programs that are FDA-approved, starting with the semaglutide that can have you losing up to 6 pounds in a week. When you do the math and figure out how much weight you can lose in a month, and how it can actually positively affect your life, it's something that you can investigate, look into, and ask questions of the people at Apollo Men's Health. Go to ApolloMH.com right now. Check out all the services they offer. If there's a couple that interest you, sign up for an appointment. Most major insurances accepted. There's discounts for military personnel and first responders. But then go in with an open mind. Answer their questions honestly. Find out all the ways they can help you, because they'll put you on a path to get to your goals and they'll get you the results that you need. They're fantastic people that do great things on a daily basis. They also have full body composition analysis, so you can chart the progress you're making with working out and see how your body fat is going down, muscle mass is going up, numbers are making sense. Also, recovering quicker is something that they can help you with HGH peptide therapy. They have stuff for your smoothies and supplements, too. Two locations to better serve you in your downtown Houston. Mention my name, Joel Blank. You get a free B12 shot or a free body composition on your first official visit. But go see them, because they'll get you results and feeling better right away. They're good people doing great things. Go see the people at Apollo Men's Health.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, Hunter Brown on the mound for your Houston Astros tonight against the Oakland A's. Soon to be the Vegas A's, Joel.
Yeah, but when? And where are they playing in the meantime?
So they just put, that's a good question, but we just saw, so they just put a rendering out of the first stadium. Mm-hmm. How many seats do you think it's going to hold?
45.
30. Ooh. Light, right?
Very light, especially with the touristy Vegas attraction of going to a sporting event. Way too light, I think.
Yep.
But you know they're going to probably be really high priced.
That's why, I think. Because like I tried to go out there last year for a game, and it was like $450 to sit at the top. I was like, oh, this ain't for me.
Ouch.
This ain't for me.
Yeah, that's like, tough. I told Jeremy when he went out there, just ask for a press pass. There's doubt he should have got it. He said he's one of those guys that can't do that. He absolutely just refuses to do that. I'm like, it's part of the benefit of everybody has benefits in their job. One of them is if you work for an ESPN or doing sports radio, you can get a press pass to go to a game. It's not like you're not committing a crime.
It's and like if the number one benefit.
Talk about it, you did your job.
Yeah, it's like the number one benefit.
Yeah, I've always struggled with the fact that he struggled with doing that. Oh, by the way, before we go any further,
yes.
To wrap up what we did today when we were talking about who was your most hated Astro when they were an Astro, not after they left. And some of the list were some good ones. Carlos Lee definitely got mentioned. Jose Siri got mentioned, which surprised me a little bit.
He's in some tanks right now.
Yeah, he's actually having quite a year. Carlos Gomez definitely made the list. Carlos Lee made the list. Doug Drabek made the list. That's an interesting one because he did have some success here. Ken Giles, Jay Powell, if you know, you know. Hated Siri, Mancini a couple of times. Hated Will Harris.
How do you hate Trey Mancini?
Well, because he didn't exactly perform great, but he did make one hell of a play at first base against the Phillies.
He's like the most like lovable guy ever.
Hated Will Harris. Why? Because you gave up the home run? Because you didn't hate him when he was an all-star and was a really good pitcher.
Yeah.
I mean, so that's interesting. But Mancini made it quite a bit. Mitch Wild Thing Williams. I didn't even realize he played for the Astros. But, yeah, those were kind of the leaders in the clubhouse. J.D. Martinez, Brett Wallace, and Lucas Harrell. There's some blasts from the past.
I wonder if J.D. Martinez is almost like revisionist history because he was so good after he left.
I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
They hated the fact that he got away, but that was Luno's doing.
So Astros back in action after a day off, another Thursday. They still have like every Thursday off for the next like 2 weeks. It's bizarre.
You played his tune, right?
Yeah, I played Hunter Brown's tune.
All right.
What do you expect like in this series? Like we saw the offense kind of didn't do much in Oakland last weekend, but they won the series. They swept the series. They had the big explosion on Monday of offense. Tuesday and Wednesday are blech.
Well, it's another get
and
right.
And then now
for
it's
me.
Back. You're back in Oakland.
It's a get right for me, Joe, but here's the caveat. At some point, the A's have to win a game. That's what worries me. Like, they're not going to lose every game. So the fact that you're now kind of counting on what happened a week ago to happen again, and even though a week ago when they swept the series, their offense wasn't exactly ripping the cover off of it and doing what I expected them to do. If you're glass half full, this is the get right series where you come off the tough losses in Milwaukee, you bounce back, you get right, you beat the Oakland single A's, as Jeremy calls them, and everybody has a hell of a Memorial Day weekend. But the scary thing is now the same people that jumped back on the bandwagon when they won the 8 in a row are looking for a reason to jump back off. And now that they've lost 2 in a row, if they drop a game or two in Oakland, now you're going to have people throwing up red flags. And the same people that when we were losing series early in the season and had to talk people off a ledge are going to come right back and start becoming a problem again, saying, what's wrong with this team?
You know, it's funny, Joel, is most people would say, we're those people.
See, no, we get roped in with Jeremy a lot, but I think...
talk about a lot of concerns.
But I've had, I mean, look, I call it like I see it, but I don't, I never once said this is the series that you should start worrying about this team. And I've never once said that this team isn't going to win the American League and be competing for a World Series again. Even when in my gut, I started to be a little concerned when they were losing as much as they were early in the year. But I think the 8-game winning streak should have convinced everybody, look, when this team's healthy and right, because remember now, the last 2 games in Milwaukee, Altuve didn't play.
Yeah, I'm curious if he'll be in the lineup tonight.
I think he should.
Because it's like they said he was sick.
Yeah, and I think that he's had enough time. You know, when you're a professional athlete, they're going to give you a whole lot of stuff to get rid of it as quick as possible. I got to believe he's going to be back tonight.
Yeah. That's going to be so interesting. Like, I mean, I expect him to win 2 out of 3 this weekend. I'm excited to see Hunter Brown. Every time he's out there, it's like, he's so nasty.
He really, really is. You know, to me, it's like, which pitchers you're going to see in this series? Because the A's saw him. So what the pitchers that the A's saw less than a week ago, advantage A's, because now you know exactly how filthy his stuff is, but you know what it does. So you have a different approach at the plate, and you know what to expect a little bit more. That's where the Astros have to step up more offensively, because they're not going to be able to squeak out these one-run games where it's tied in the 7th, or they squeak out one in the 8th or the 9th, and they win the ball game. They're going to have to make a statement, and for their own well-being is and the fans' well-being, as well as what this series is, when they've seen your pitchers, you got to jump on them, and you got to send a message early and often that we're going to pound every run out, and we're going to make this the series that it should have been a week ago.
Yeah, for sure. All right, one thing I just want to circle back to, right at the beginning of the show, the former Texan DeAndre Hopkins officially got cut by the Arizona Cardinals. Mm-hmm. They're eating his $22 million in dead cap. He'll be off their books next year, so now we can start negotiating. He doesn't have to go through waiver wires. Already a couple reports that the Chiefs and the Cardinals were in deep trade talks at one point, but then just they couldn't get past the contract. I feel like that's where he's going to go. But Laremy Tunsil and Titus Howard are actively tweeting at DeAndre Hopkins, trying to recruit him to come home.
Well, trying to recruit him and getting him to answer is a different story.
That's a good point. Right?
Now, someone said that he started following CJ Stroud on social media. So I guess that's at least a response. But I don't know what all that means. When you look at Vegas, and we always say, hey, when you want some kind of confirmation one way or another, the truest form of what chances anybody has is left in Vegas' hands. Vegas just came out with the top teams for DeAndre Hopkins, and Dallas leads the list at 3-1. And then it's Kansas City at 4-1, Carolina at 5-1, and then Baltimore, Buffalo, New England, and Philly at 7-1.
The New England one really surprises me.
Well, Belichick has come out and said multiple times how much he loves him.
I know.
And how good he thinks he is. But the Bill O'Brien thing is, it still puts a snafu in all of it for me. I don't think that Hopkins can get over that. And I don't think that they've rectified that.
It would really have to be like what we were talking about earlier, that was really a Jack Easterby thing.
Yeah.
Like, it really was Jack that, like, caused.
Did you not hear what I heard, though, that we were talking about? Because I couldn't. I don't know that I could find a direct quote to put on O'Brien, but multiple sources said.
Oh, the baby mamas.
O'Brien had problem with the baby mamas.
Yeah, yeah.
O'Brien had problems with the fact he didn't practice.
Yeah.
He had all the issues with what Hopkins was or wasn't doing.
Yes, but that whole era of Texans football, I feel like, is blurry.
To where, well, you're like, right, because
like,
at that point,
what is Jack? What is Bill?
At that point, they were interchangeable.
Yeah,
Jack and Bob were Bill O'Brien were on his back porch talking about what to do. They made the trade. Jack and Bill were doing the draft together. When Bill was punching tables and pissed off, was it Jack or was it that, you know, what else was going on? But it was always Bill and I did this. Jack and I did this. O'Brien was always mentioning that whatever he did, Jack was in step with him.
All right, what are you doing? Anything from Memorial Day weekend?
You could ask the person
softball
behind you.
Just
no, we have no softball
weekend?
This weekend, thankfully. We'll be practicing a little softball, but we are definitely in R&R mode because Lisa's been burning it at both ends doing the night shows. So we're going to be chilling. What about you?
I think we're just chilling. I think we're going to cook out on Monday. But besides that, just chilling, relaxing. There tomorrow, except for tomorrow.
Oh, promo.
12 ahead. To 2, the bullpen. Go. Myself, Joe George, Andrew Carlson. What's the wheelhouse leading with? Hopkins. Duh.
For sure.
I mean,
no brainer.
Even though Jake's not here, it's Hopkins. All right, he's Joel Blank. You can find him on Twitter at Pac-Man Joel. I'm Joe George. You can find
Jeremy
me on Twitter.
Suspended or just leave?
Oh, no, he just left. Jeremy's just lazy bones. You know, we're not the priority. UH Cougar baseball is. All right, we are back on Tuesday at 12 o'clock. I will talk to you tomorrow at 12 on the bullpen. Wheelhouse is up next.